All right. Welcome, guys, to another episode of Building Tech Talk. We're joined by Brandon Carbel of Weatherskin Coatings.
Hi, guys.
Thank you for being our guest today.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
As always, we have our resident experts. We've got Dr. Doug Brown and Scott Jenkins of ZS2 Technologies. And as always on Building Tech Talk, we're going to be talking about new ideas, new technology, new science coming out in the building industry, things that are making our world better through the built environment. So just give our listeners a little bit of a background on where Weatherskin came from and where you came from and why Weatherskin exists today.
Yeah, well, Weatherskin, we produce construction coatings. Where we came from, you know, we all worked in the construction industry, residential construction, the owners here at Weatherskin, and we saw a lot of problems, one being cancer. Cancer in a lot of the workers that were spraying the materials that we were using for years and years and years. And it affected a lot of people that we know. Another problem being we hated working with the materials that we had available. Peel and stick, it's just hard to work with. It doesn't stick half the time. The coatings were corrosive to a lot of the new materials. So you know, we have these innovative substrate materials coming out, and yet the products that are meant to go on them don't work well with them. So we wanted to tackle that. We didn't know how to get into it originally. So we started looking around North America, looking around the globe, seeing who's producing what, and what is the industry looking for? And low VOCs, low emissions, eco-friendly. These were the buzzwords. So we knew that the environment and that safety were propelling the industry. And then we wanted to create products that met those standards, you know, and met the performance standards that contractors need. So, you know, that's where Weatherskin was born.
That is fantastic, Brandon.
The one thing with Weatherskin, you know, as Doug and I have been introduced to Brandon and his team, is they have a similar, I would say, value system in terms of, you know, your comment about, you know, you guys coming from the construction industry and people, your former coworkers, were getting cancer.
Yes.
These materials were horrific. And there has to be, you know, you applied some technology, science, you sought out innovators and brought them together under the Weatherskin banner. And that's what got, you know, I think that's what got me excited when I first met Brandon, you know, a little while ago and saw what you guys were capable of.
Yeah. I mean, that's our core value is protection, you know, not only the worker, but I mean, the people occupying the structures, the environment around it, the substrate itself, the building, the assets in the building. We're there to use products that protect and increase the longevity of these structures. And I mean, we know that's what you guys are all about too.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So what, if you're not using, you know, VOCs or those volatile organic compounds that people are not wanting
in their product? I'm glad for the audience you just explained that. Now, see, we appreciate having you as a producer, director, everything here, Matt.
Just so we're all on the same page. Like, what is a VOC? Can we just get that so that everybody understands what we're talking about when we are talking about the volatile organic compounds?
Sure, and maybe, I don't know, Doug might want to expand on my explanation, but you know, when you're spraying, even after something cures, a lot of it has residual particulate, gaseous particulates that come off of it, and pollute an environment. And I would say that is what we're trying to avoid. We don't want that residual byproduct that seeps into the air, into the soil, into the living space that people are occupying.
Yeah, and I think you definitely hit it on the head there. It's funny, in chemistry and science in general, we, you know, define a lot of compounds and products in our lives as non-toxic, but you know, in certain concentrations and when you're exposed chronically at low concentrations for a long time, these things can start to be problematic. Like salt, sodium chloride, you know, we use it sparsely on our food and things like that consumed. It, you know, it's quite toxic at larger concentrations. And a lot of the things that Brendan was addressing before about these volatile organic compounds and sort of older based sprayed technologies, you know, at those sort of trace compositions, it's not that damaging. But if you're exposed to it day after day, slowly after slowly, you know, these things can start to be a problem, similarly to how large quantities of salt can create issues.
So if they were so bad, why were they being used before? Why are we not wanting to use them now? What's been the change?
I would say, you know, after a certain amount of time and a certain amount of negative results, the byproduct of using these harsh chemicals being health effects to people, environmental effects. After a certain amount of time, the industry is almost forced to change. You know, when there's so much data out there collected that, hey, this is not actually good for the user, good for the people around it, good for people consuming it, good for people touching it. That those are a lot of precursors that determine change. And it's hard to argue, especially if you are in Canada and you are touting, or in North America and you are touting, this progressive thinking that we are moving in a direction to a cleaner, safer future, and cleaner, safer, using cleaner and safer building products.
You know, Matt, it's a great question about, like, well, why did these things exist? But really a great analogy, asbestos. You know, it was a great product until they realized slowly over time. And that's exactly what Brendan and, you know, with Weatherskin and their coatings and all of their technologies that they're bringing together, they're solving a problem that existed, but a long time ago, people didn't know existed, right? Because it took time. And then people developed health issues. You know, the safety of these buildings, we talk about sick building syndrome. What you're replacing was a key contributor to sick buildings and that air quality. So
it's interesting you say that, you know, it's about solving a problem. And really, originally, the original spray coatings and things like that were to solve a problem, a durability problem, a coating problem, and how to get these coatings to last. And that's where those chemicals came in. And now you found new ways to do it without those. Is there a trade-off? Like, are we trading some durability? Are we trading some performance on our coatings now by trying to reduce those VOCs versus what we had before?
You know, and I think it's almost a misconception that these chemical-based coatings perform better. You think of something like a tar used for waterproofing, it's actually water dampening. It doesn't even waterproof a foundation. It's not even meant to be in the sun. Things like silicone that are commonly used aren't meant to be in the sun, yet we're using them on roofs. We're using them for waterproofing. They degrade quickly. They need to be reapplied often. So the performance indicators necessarily weren't even there on a lot of these products. It was a challenge when the industry started turning towards greener technologies for coatings. It faced all those challenges of adhesion, durability, impact resistance, tensile strength. And it took a while for the brains behind that to come up with solutions. And the foremost chemist on aqueous-based polymers turned out to be in our own backyard in Calgary. And he had been doing stuff since the late 80s with aqueous-based coatings, meaning water-based acrylic products that were outperforming anything else on the market, to where the oil and gas industry, instead of using bitumen and petrol products, were using these products to protect their oil and gas assets. So the technology's been there. Yeah, the case study's there. And that's a thing about Weatherskin is we look for those products that have that history, that already have those case studies. So it's in the field. Projects have been done and they've lasted the test of time. And that's what we bring to market and brand it and bring it to construction, wider construction, from a special use to a broader use.
You know, Matt, it kind of leads to a question I was thinking about, you know, and asking Brendan as we've learned so much about their technologies and why they're growing so quickly and people are so excited about them. One thing Doug and I have experienced in our history, you know, with technology companies in the construction is there's been a difficult, wall to climb with people about change, even though this is a superior technology. This is material science. This is scientifically proven. Your technology team has proven this. Have you experienced these difficulties in trying to change like construction? And this is a, a big reason for our podcast is to introduce folks to innovative technologies. Maybe you can chat about that a bit.
Well, I mean, what the walls that we've come up against, the other products are there in plenty. They're mass produced and they're cheap, and the industry is married to these older technologies, these older products, because of those reasons. And to introduce new products, we've had to have a ton of testing. They not only want to see that we're superior on or equal to on all the performance indicators that these products perform at, but also they want to see why are we better? How can we actually improve construction in terms of saving it time and cost? We've come up against some big walls.
I know there's stories there, but we're a PG audience, and actually we should give a shout out to, the 12 family members that downloaded the first podcast. We should thank them a lot. We appreciate all the support, mom, dad, your family's been great. But that's bang on. We see the same things. It's a challenge. But one thing that has really impressed me with Weatherskin is actually, and you touched on at the end there, is the third-party certification and the amount of investment you've made to kind of answer any doubts, to provide that comfort level to potential clients, the people that you're working with. I think that's critical to their success.
Yeah, is that something that we talked about this last episode about some of the hurdles that startups face, exactly bringing these game-changing technologies to market where there is a resistance to change in the building industry. Is that one of the building blocks for you when you were a startup to get this more widely adopted? Was it the hard data that they needed in order to get over that that hesitation when you're talking about something water-based to do a coating? Like that's a mental block. And was it the testing that took you over the top, or what do you think did that for you?
Yeah, most of the products, when we acquire the chemistry and then start to produce in volume, there is a lot of testing there. But if we look at a lot of competitive products and they'll make green claims or they'll make, hail resistance claims, and then you start to tear into their MSDS sheet or their data sheet, and all these statistics that would say, yes, this is hail resistant or this is a green product, it says no data, So they're making claims, but they're a new product, and our precedent that we've set for ourselves as a company is if we're going to make a claim, we need the testing to back it. So we make sure we know our impact resistance rate, and we know how our coatings perform, how thick they need to be, what they're made of, what they're capable of, what they'll adhere to. I don't want to know if it will bond to one material in construction. I want to know how my coatings bond to every material in construction. So where a lot of other products leave holes in their technical data, we fill up those holes. So, we have testing for pretty well every single claim that we make, if not every claim that we make. Something like the Farmer and our surface wash product, there is a lot of COVID claims right now, kills COVID. And what a lot of people are looking for.
So we should be drinking.
Do not drink. Do not drink it.
If those claims are true, right?
Unless we do that test right now, that this can be some third-party testing, and we'll see how the rest of the interview goes.
Yeah.
it's actually a very long process and a lot of lab tests to actually be able to make the claim that you're medical grade, that you are able to kill COVID. Nobody's actually tested on COVID. It's not available. You have to test on coronavirus or MERS or SARS, one of the earlier coronaviruses. And so we're not making those claims until we have the test results back. We always want to meet that standard. We're not going to introduce a new product to the public. We're not going to introduce it to commercial or special industry until we know for certain that it can do what we say it can do.
Is that a trust factor as well when you do make a claim and it's backed up, and versus, you know, red herring where look over here, it could do this, but it turns out it doesn't. You never get that trust back with a customer. Does that play into your role as a growth as a startup, which was very successful? Is it a trust building blocks that has to happen?
Absolutely. Like, I have to trust it. You know, my team here has to believe in the products that we're moving around North America and to our licensees and to our preferred contractors. But at the end of the day, the person who is the client that is either having the coating go on their building or the person buying it for their own home, they need to be able to trust us as a brand. You know, and in 50 locations, we haven't had a warranty issue yet. So, and over 4 years. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We're all knocking on wood right now.
It's still construction. Still construction.
and I'm sure they'll come, but, you know, we owe that a lot to the testing and to proper processes and staying diligent to not only how it's applied, but when it's applied, where it's applied, who's applying it.
It sort of ties a little bit, you know, Matt, and as I mentioned, similar value proposition, why I was so keen to, you know, for us to have Brandon on as our first guest. You know, it ties into, you know, Doug's entire career a little bit, you know, in terms of, you know, having that science background, using science. This is material science. And, you know, for the goal and with some of our upcoming guests who are also advancing things in the construction world is, you know, doing it based on data and real life science and having that testing. I think it's critical. I've been so impressed with what you guys have put together.
Oh, thank you guys.
So we're really impressed, but, and maybe this is something you guys could jump in, Doug and Scott. What's a coating that doesn't exist that we wish existed, that is needed, that is a lacking, a vacuum basically in the building industry right now that we just don't have a good solution for? Is there anything that comes to mind that you guys, maybe we'll trigger some ideas for you guys at Weatherskin, but just is there something that we still haven't gotten right in the building industry yet?
I'm going to set you up a little bit, Dr. Doug, because I know some of the stuff you're working on and I know some of the stuff you and Brandon have chatted about. It goes to a little bit, Brandon and I were talking before we started the building tech talk session, is this product that's in front of me is, you know, can you apply it in a vertical application versus a horizontal? And the reason I was asking a little bit, you know, selfish reasons, you know, building a house shortly, is aesthetics. So can you marry, you know, these high performing, sustainable, zero VOC coatings for multiple applications that Weatherskin has come together, material science, with now an aesthetically pleasing coating or physical products, you know, for people that want certain looks to customize in terms of their building. I think that's maybe the next, and I know you guys are close, so I'm setting you both up for this, and I'm setting you up in terms, you know, some of your work with, you know, the magnesium cements and other cement technologies, and can you turn those into products that are sequestering CO2, but are also beautiful?
Yeah, I guess I would add to that a little bit too. You know, products that maybe aren't petroleum based would be something that I would like to see happen as well. You know, as we move towards a more sustainable future. But certainly ceramic based coatings, I think are very interesting. As well as some integrations of sort of air cleaning technologies. Do you see any of those things kind of in your business coming down the pipeline as far as availability?
You know what? Where the challenge lies with the green coatings is they don't exist in some applications yet, and we want them to. Anti-graffiti, we're working on a coating. We're working on a submersible line for freshwater to high pH. As far as the aesthetic coatings, I think we may have, you know, we've gotten that lineup pretty good for waterborne, acrylic, UV friendly, washable, weather friendly coatings. the aesthetic of a nice rich paint, a lot of different texture options, and a whole whack of color options. What we'll see a lot is these aesthetic coatings, you know, we'll see a lot of spin products. So we'll see somebody take a random chemistry, a random paint, and throw an additive in it, and they'll say this is cork insulated paint. You know, it adds R value. Well, that cork can be added to any coating, and a clever marketing team can say it's an R value coating. We're really focused on the chemistry. You know, the cork is an organic material. If it's not waterproofed, if it's not safe, it's going to degrade. You're going to lose adhesion, and companies like ours are going to be fixing your company's work because it's falling off walls. So we're always focused on the chemistry, you know, the performance, the durability, the adhesion. And can we do all that and keep it green? So there's some interesting materials coming out. There's some interesting industries, the mining industry. We just got a coating approved by MSHA, which is Mining Safety and Health Association in the U.S. It's run by the U.S. Department of Labor. So we're certified for confined space coatings down there. There's all these new materials. There's the magnesium board, the tech board that ZS2 is famous for. And there's the mass timber construction coming out that where we want a coating for that. Some different metals that have adhesion problems, vinyl, we adhere to vinyl. So, you know, we can almost, if we can create good enough chemistry, we can tackle a lot of different substrates and applications. So we just hone back in on the science.
You mentioned the vinyl, and it kind of brings up actually another, thought here and question for Brandon is, having seen some of their projects firsthand, a little bit different than maybe, you know, what we see at ZS2 Technologies, but the capability to extend the life of buildings, to go in and retrofit structures, that's been a great market for you with your technologies. And that in itself is very sustainable.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's been a huge market for us. A lot of the property management firms that we work with, maybe the building doesn't have the budget for a new roof, but you can go over top of your old substrate with the weather skin material and waterproof your existing roof. You know, you're not evacuating tenants because you're not using heat. You're not doing a complete tear off. You're actually cooling those top floor tenants down because you're refracting the heat back. Definitely the stucco, you know, a lot of stucco damage right now. So that's where a lot of our crews are out working on patching stucco with our product and then spraying over it, which we have a lot of testing on our textured coatings, our exterior coatings. And it not only does it make a vapor air barrier, but it's actually far superior to stucco in terms of adhesion, waterproofing, and how it holds up against these hailstorms. So something like vinyl, though, like you got to be careful. You got to check what kind of vinyl siding it is, because what happens with vinyl? And
the best vinyl is 45, right? But the rest is problematic in the world.
Well, it's if it's too thin and it's white and it's not meant to be coated. It's not necessarily because of adhesion. It's because it's so thin that if you make it darker, it's going to absorb more sun and it's going to warp all over the place, no matter what coating you put on it. So coating vinyl, people be careful.
and check the vinyl. That's the lesson for this episode of Tech Talk. Coating vinyl, be careful.
All right, Brandon, we're pretty much out of time here, but thank you so much for all your insight into the world of coatings and what is coming up. It sounds like you guys are working on some really interesting things. And I think everyone at the table and everybody listening is going to be watching you guys closely with what you come up with next. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.